Hello and welcome to today's Joy Wine and Food Pairing. I am joined in studio by Chef Tony from Cafe Brazil and Carolyn Joy Always. Pleasure to have you both in the studio today.
Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
We are having a wonderful lamb. So Tony, if you could just let us know just a little bit about the lamb and what's...
This is our Argentinian rack of spring lamb. And the origin of the lamb is actually New Zealand. Very tender, very delicate, not a lot of muscle, and so very little fat. This undergoes a three-day marinade, and once we serve, it's cut into double chops, presented with fresh herb chimichurri salsa and pickled gypsy chilies. We also oftentimes do this with a homemade, house-made Colorado plum chutney, or we may use, in this season, a strawberry rhubarb glaze.
Okay.
But lamb typically pairs well with fruit, hints of spice and vinegar in this dish.
So tell us about the marinade.
The marinade, it's a three-day marinade. We start out making mint water. So we'll take fresh mint leaf and we'll steep it, and then we will strain the leaves from the mint water. We will add a hint of cider vinegar. We'll add a hint of dry mint, and we'll add raw sugar. And that is the actual mint bath for the lamb.
Sometimes I think, can you marinate something too long in the vinegar?
Yes,
and it kind of makes it
absolutely
mushy.
Absolutely.
So how do you...
Not so much mushy, but when you do cook, it tends to cook in the bath of the marinade.
Yeah.
And so in order to avoid the appearance that the lamb may be overcooked, I find that, you know, 1 day, 2 day, 3 day is the max.
Mm-hmm.
If it carries over that, then the texture of the meat will toughen,
mm-hmm.
and it starts to as well not maintain the proper temperature color when you cook it.
So I don't know why, as a home chef, I'm always, I don't know if afraid is the word, of cooking lamb very much. I'm just not as familiar with it.
Yes.
Why is that?
I think a lot of people that don't have a culinary background or a familial ethnic culinary background tend to shy away from certain cuts of meats, certain types of meats, as well as seafood. And probably seafood may be the biggest one on that list, because oftentimes finding fresh seafood or sourcing mm-hmm. fresh seafood is a real problem, being landlocked. And people don't necessarily understand when seafood is at its best. They can't tell if something's just flown in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the seafood and fish, most everything we get is, you know, 12 hours, 13 mm-hmm. hours out of the water.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
And I think most of the restaurateurs today are working with seafoods that are not, you know, sitting on a dock or sitting on a boat 1 day, 2 days, 3 days before it gets to its point of consumption.
So this is baby lamb, though, out of New
Zealand.
Spring
lamb.
Spring
lamb. It is.
And Colorado, though, has a lot of great
Colorado
lamb, too,
is
right?
Famous for lamb, but the reason why we always tend to go with the New Zealand spring lamb is because of the actual texture, because of the lack of sinew mm-hmm. in the meat. Colorado lamb, oftentimes we find a bit fatty on what we're able to source, so we tend to stick with the New Zealand.
So what's the sinew?
Yeah.
Sinew is...
No, that's okay. I was going to ask, so thank you very much.
along the exterior where you have the fat cap of the lamb, it tends to go into the meat, and then along the bone, as the bone goes down, you'll have more fat or sinew in that area. But typically from the saddle of the lamb, you're going to see more sinew in Colorado lamb.
So sometimes when you have lamb, it's, I don't know if it's because the lamb might be a little bit older, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of the age of the lamb.
Yes.
But you get a much gamier taste. And here we're able to pick up a lot of the flavors, which we still need to talk about, the chimichurri sauce. And you don't have a rub on this, right? It's just the...
We season the lamb.
Mm-hmm.
It's a three-step process. The lamb is seasoned separately. And then it is placed in the mint bath, the marinade, and then it sits for, you know, that 2-day, 3-day period to absorb the flavors.
Is there garlic in here?
There is garlic.
Okay, because I'm a garlic fiend, and yeah. so I could just smell it. I wish we could have had live to get the sound effect of it, but you were searing this, and I'm like, it just smells like garlic all throughout the studio, and it's just wonderful.
It's a wonderful marinade. We have so many compliments on the flavor of this lamb. It's a special request for sure. But in the marinade, basically, as I mentioned, fresh mint, dry mint, cider vinegar, and raw sugar. And then the seasoning on the lamb marries into that marinade to augment different flavors. In the seasoning on the lamb, we have a start off point with soy sauce, Worcestershire sauce. Then we do Dijon mustard, sea salt, black pepper, red pepper, fresh garlic sliced.
My favorite.
That's what adds that punch of garlic there. What do you think? I mean,
I've
cooked these, as I mentioned. We have a couple of pieces that are rare, which a lot of people like.
It's like an explosion of flavor in your mouth.
Yes, it's just amazing. And I'm not a big meat eater, but some of the things that people bring to these tapings, I'm like, okay, I got to try. And then I'm like, why am I trying to get away from meat? And this is one of those because I know it just sounds crazy, but I just am always hearing the bah, you know, when I hear lamb.
Yeah.
When you said lamb, I'm like, but it's...
Well, especially when you say baby spring lamb, you're thinking,
meh. I'm like, oh,
I know.
But it's wonderful. It's got a really, I mean, just the colors. But I will say this, there's some heat, and but it's not penetrating. It's not overwhelming. You know, it's a nice amount of heat, but it's not so much, because I've eaten some things sometimes where there's so much heat, I can't tell the flavors that are in the food, and mm-hmm. this is not the case.
Well, these flavors, these seasonings, condiments, they marry well together.
So there's lots of different layers going on here, and it is like an explosion in mm-hmm. your mouth, and you've got a great balance of sugar and spice. And a little bit of smoke mm-hmm. from the charring.
Yes.
And then you've got the pepper and the garlic and all of those things. And the mint
and
has
then
a different component as well.
The chimichurri salsa also.
So tell us about that.
Well, fresh herbs. Once again, fresh basil, oregano, garlic again. You'll see mint,
okay.
Water, and honey.
Oh, the sweet, okay.
And basically the cider vinegar.
So this must be Cafe Brazil Tony's little especial.
It's a signature.
It's an international dish. I mean, because I think chimichurri is generally considered from Argentina and with maybe some Spanish influences.
Yes. So many different countries have fresh herb, and for lack of a better word, I'll say fresh herb salsas. Mm-hmm. They work well because... they can be served at room temperature. They can be served cold. They keep well when you're using good ingredients and you're handling them well, that's 90%
of the
flavor profile, you know.
If you have just joined us, I'm Mindy McNeil, and this is our May Wine and Food pairing. We are joined in studio, of course, as always, with Carolyn Joy of Joy Wine and Spirits, and we have Chef Tony here from Cafe Brazil. And I need you to say the name again of this beautiful lamb dish. I don't want to butcher it.
This is our Argentinian spring lamb done with a fresh herb chimichurri salsa.
Carolyn, what did you bring to pair with this today?
So I feel like in the last 12 months, I've probably featured several different rosés, but it is May and all of the flowers are blooming. It's one of the most beautiful springs I've seen in Denver in a long time because we didn't we haven't had any snow that's ruined everything.
Yes.
it's just a gorgeous day, so I really wanted to bring a rosé. And they say rosé all day, and they also say rosé is to refresh, not to impress. Mm. So I knew, I'm very familiar with Tony's cooking. He's been involved with our chili cook-off and won it several times, and he's always has this myriad of flavors. So I definitely didn't want to bring a wine that would compete with it. Also, I wasn't sure how spicy the chimichurri sauce could be, because sometimes I think it can be a little bit spicy.
Yes.
And so generally when you have spice or heat in your sauce, you don't want to have tannin in your wine or too much alcohol in your wine, because those compete. So what I was looking for, I could have picked a real fresh red, something bright and juicy and clean and unoaked. That would be good, and we could even chill it a little bit. But I decided to do this rosé because I went to a little lunch, and people from Provence, France came over and showed several different wines. And today I brought the La Mascarone. This is a wine that we have carried for years. It originally was in the Miraval estate, and Miraval was where Pink Floyd actually recorded most of The Wall.
Okay.
It's this beautiful chateau. And they even had, so then what happened is Tom Bove, the man that owned this estate, sold it to Brad and Jolie Pitt.
Oh,
and
okay.
They made Chateau Miraval. And then this man, Tom Bove, bought an estate next to it, which was really just a pile of rocks, really nothing there. He cleaned it all up. He planted organically. He has clay and limestone soils, and he now has the same winemaker that used to be at Miraval, and now this is La Mascarone. And so this is a wine from Provence. I think that, for me, Provence is the pinnacle of rosé. You're going to see over the next few years, rosé is just exploding. And what's happened is that everybody is in on the rosé game. So all around the world, we're seeing wines from Argentina, you know, New Zealand, Italy, Spain, France, and America. So you're going to see a lot of American rosé. But I still think that my favorite is from Provence. Everybody wants in on the rosé game, but there's still wines out there that I just think embody what it's all about, which is just fresh, fun, fruity, clean. A lot of times in a rosé, I'm looking more for a flaw than I am for defining characteristics, because they're all generally pretty tasty, and they're all fresh and clean and bright.
So when you say a flaw versus a characteristic, I am not the best, I know we've talked about this, I don't know tons about wine, mm-hmm. So for someone like me, how would I know a flaw from a characteristic?
Well, let's say when you're tasting it, you think it tastes kind of bitter.
Okay.
That could be considered a characteristic, I guess, but I'm not really looking for bitter rosé. I'm looking for something really fresh and bright. A characteristic might be something floral or feminine, but it wouldn't necessarily be overwhelmingly sweet. Now, some people might really like, there is White Zinfandel, and this is not to be confused with White Zinfandel,
okay.
Which really paved the way for a lot of wine drinkers, and certainly maybe for rosé here in the U.S., but in general, White Zinfandel is a much sweeter wine than these. Rosé can be very, very dry. This one is not. One of the reasons I chose this wine is because it has such great balance. It's just rounded out. I think that the spice in this dish and the sugar that you have in here,
yes.
Brings out the sweetness what sweetness there is. It brings it out in this wine.
I think this was an excellent choice of a companion to this dish. It's bright, as you say. It's fresh. It's crisp. Interesting about rosé, 40 years ago on restaurant menus, it was a staple. You had to see several rosé representations. And then I guess somewhere around the 80s, it just kind of disappeared. And you did not, late 80s, early 90s, kind of disappeared off of a lot of restaurant menus, and you really didn't see it offered as much. And now coming back, I've always enjoyed and loved rosés, just because of the simple, fresh nature of them. But as you say, now you're kind of seeing a renaissance in the push on
it's crazy.
The importation.
I mean, we probably have 100 different rosés,
wow.
And most of them are not domestic. And that doesn't even include all of your general brands that are now, that used to sell like a Chardonnay, Cabernet, Merlot, and Sauvignon Blanc. Now they're losing sales, so they're now making a rosé.
And I could, for myself, easily see that new renaissance of rosé surpass Zinfandel.
Oh, by far, yeah.
And it's so funny because when I was growing up, I'd always hear the commercials of red, white, or rosé.
Or white Zinfandel.
Or that terminology has gone away. And so now to hear that it could be making a resurgence.
Yeah, and these are great wines. I mean, this wine is made to be rosé. Sometimes rosé is actually almost a byproduct in which they're making a red wine and they bleed off some of the fresh juice so that you're extracting some of the color. And you're actually adding to the color of the red wine and extracting some for the rosé. But this wine is made to be rosé, so it's not an afterthought. And there's a lot of rosés out there that are intended to be grown and made into rosé from the ground up.
And speaking of the color of this wine, it's got a certain clarity to it, which is really appealing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, almost salmon, almost coppery color. And like I said, I mean, if you can picture a cherry blossom or what the trees, now they're getting a little past it right now, but if you can picture what they've been looking like, that's almost like you've bottled all of that in this glass to me. It's like a feeling almost.
That's a fantastic description.
So my thought is, and maybe this is just where I'm just so new with wines, it's light. It's a light color. So does that mean it would go well like with a fish or a chicken or a seafood then? Or could I eat this with a red meat?
You definitely could.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, look
cow
at
of
here.
It.
Yeah.
Here we are with here, that.
Yeah, and especially it depends on the sauces that you make sometimes.
Okay.
Like if you had a tartare, that would be really delicious with this, which would be something rare, or it would be actually raw.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you had carpaccio, that would be delicious, because sometimes I think you finish that off with a little olive oil and lemon. And so that bright acidity would help with this wine. You could easily have this with a cheeseburger. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, that's
yeah, I mean, you go home, I want a cheeseburger tonight, and I don't feel like a beer or a red wine.
And I think it works well without food as on its own.
Yeah, exactly.
Just solo, as a solo
act. Summer patio, you
know? And so I think that's part of the popularity right now, because people do see the versatility with this wine.
Okay.
You know, when we went to the lunch, they were even pairing it with like tiramisu and some lemon meringue type dishes, which to me, I don't like this wine as well with that, although you could have it with like a strawberry shortcake maybe or something like that. But I prefer it with
fresh
really
fruit.
Fruit, really just anything that had a chutney. Like if you had a spice and you mentioned the chutney.
I brought along with me a Colorado plum chutney that we make in-house.
Yeah.
And that was the other option to serve with this dish. I'll give it to you so you can take it back to the shop.
I'm like, you're holding out on us, Tony. I'm like, where was this at?
No. Yeah.
Well, is this like one of the more popular items over at Cafe Brazil?
It is.
Okay.
It's almost always by special request.
Okay.
And we have people calling specifically. They won't come to the restaurant unless we're going to prepare the lamb for them. And we let them know all we need is 3 days. If they call, we'll have it available for them.
And I want to make a little plug here for Tony, because he's so wonderful and he's been a fabric of our community for so long. I remember going to your place over on Navajo when it was that little adobe building, and
yes,
it was a really tiny little place. And, you know, we've had such an insurgence of new people, and we have a lot of amazing independently owned restaurants, but we also have a lot of chains coming in, and I don't want us to lose the essence and the history of Denver. And
yes,
you know, and even if in this dish, it just reminds me of some of the first things that I had, which were the prawns. I remember them. And that was like 20 years ago. Really, it was 20 years ago. So, you know, Cuvo's homegrown. Of course, my store is homegrown. Mm-hmm. Tony's restaurant is homegrown. And I hope that people that are moving here, you know, we have all these great new places, which are wonderful and I love supporting them, but also to remember that there are some staples of the community.
Cafe Brazil is one of those.
Yeah,
yes.
And
thank
to go, you know, check them out because they've been in business a long time for a reason. And I just love it, and I think it's what makes Colorado great.
Mm. And Carolyn had mentioned, you know, your previous address. Where are you located now?
We're currently at 4408 Lowell Boulevard in the Berkeley neighborhood.
Okay.
In the old Parisi space, which was originally the first three Sons restaurant.
Oh, okay.
Our building goes back to the late 30s.
And Carolyn, I know you're on 6th and Marion. Do we have a good address for you now?
Yeah. Yeah, we're in 6th and Marion. It's just 13 blocks east of Broadway. We'll be tasting this wine. We have probably 30, I'm going to guess, would be a safe number. Rosés just from Provence. And then we probably have 40 or 50 others, and we have so many on the way that I've pre-ordered. There's just a huge variety of wines. One of the reasons I wanted to feature this wine too, just real quick, is because this has always been one of our staples and one of our favorites, but actually we're going to be getting a new wine in that we haven't, they sent over a bottle on an airplane and we were able to taste it. It's from the same company, but it's from his old estate at Chateau Miraval, and it's called Miraluna.
Carolyn, thank you. Like I said, 6th and Marion, website address and telephone number?
Joywineandspirits.com, and we're at 303-744-6219.
Great. Well, thank you all very much. Cheers.